Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So today is the auspicious appearance day of Lord Krishna. So we'll read from the Bhagavad Gita. This is text chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, text number 9. Janma karma chame divyam. Evam yo veti tatvataha. Yatva deham punar janma. Naiti mam eti sorjana. Janma karma chame divyam. Evam yo veti tatvataha. Yatva deham punarajanma. Naiti mam eti sorjana. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Lord's... translation. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but obtains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. Purport. The Lord's descent from his transcendental abode is very explained in the sixth verse. One who can understand the truth of the appearance of the personality of Godhead is already liberated from the material bondage, and therefore he returns to the kingdom of God immediately after quitting this present material body. Such liberation of the living entity from material bondage is not at all easy. The impersonalists and the yogis obtain liberation only after much trouble and many, many births. When I went on my morning walk yesterday, Pani Vijay was saying, I think it was, who is it that was saying? Pandavijaya was saying that actually Prabhupada said, I tricked you. You heard in one lecture. Prabhupada said, and the devotees were going, no, Prabhupada, you didn't trick us. And then Prabhupada said, no, I did trick you. And they said, no, Prabhupada, you didn't, oh, I cheated you. And they said, no, Prabhupada, you didn't cheat us. And Prabhupada said, no, I did cheat you. I said it was very easy, but actually it's very difficult. So here it says that it's actually difficult, even to get out of the bodily concept of life. Even then, the liberation they achieve, merging into the impersonal Brahma Jyoti, the Lord, is only partial, and there is a risk of returning to this material world. For the devotee, simply by understanding the transcendental nature of the body and activities of the Lord, attains the abode of the Lord after ending this body, and does not run the risk of returning to this material world. In the Brahma Samhita 5.33, it is stated that the Lord has many, many forms and incarnations, advaitam, achutam, anadim, anantarupam. Although there are many transcendental forms of the Lord, there is still one and the same Supreme Personality of Godhead. One has to understand this fact with conviction, although it is incomprehensible to mundane scholars and empiric philosophers. As stated in the Vedas, the Purusha Bodhini Upanishad, Eko Devo Nitya Lila Nurakto Bhaktavyapi Rid Yanantaratma. The one Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternally engaged in many, many transcendental forms in relationship with his unalloyed devotees. This Vedic version is confirmed in this verse of the Gita personally by the Lord. He who accepts this truth on the strength of the authority of the Vedas and of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and who does not waste time in philosophical speculations, attains the highest perfectional state of liberation. Simply by accepting this truth on faith, one can without a doubt attain liberation. The Vedic version, Tat Tvamasi, is actually applied in this case. Anyone who understands Lord Krishna to be the Supreme, or says unto the Lord, you are the same Supreme Brahman, the Personality of Godhead, is certainly liberated instantly, and consequently his entrance into the transcendental associational Lord is guaranteed. So everyone can repeat after me. You are the same Supreme Brahman.
You are the same Supreme Brahman.
The personality of God.
The personality of God.
So now everyone is liberated instantly. And there's no need to continue on with the class because you're all guaranteed entrance into the kingdom of God. Or at least into the transcendental association of the Lord. There's only one problem with it. We have to believe it. In other words, such a faithful devotee of the Lord obtains perfection, and this is confirmed by the following Vedic assertion. Tam eva vidit vati mrityumeti nanya panta vidyate yanaya. One can attain the perfect state of liberation from birth and death simply by knowing the Lord, the personality of Godhead, and there is no other way to achieve this perfection. Shvetasvatara Upanishad 3.8. That there is no alternative means that anyone who does not understand Lord Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead is surely in the mode of ignorance, and consequently, he will not obtain salvation simply, so to speak, by licking the outer surface of the bottle of honey or by interpreting the Bhagavad Gita according to mundane scholarship. Such empiric philosophers may assume very important roles in the material world, but they are not necessarily eligible for liberation. Such puffed-up, mundane scholars have to wait for the causeless mercy of the Lord, devotee of the Lord. One should therefore cultivate Krishna consciousness with faith and knowledge, and this way obtain perfection. Janma karma chame divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tyatva deham punar janma naitimam eti sorjana. One who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities. Or here it says, one who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, or Arjuna. Namo Vishnu Vidaya Krishna Pristai Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vidanta Swaminte Namane Namaste Sarasvatun Deve Gauravani Vacharane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya De Satarane. Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati kriyatam kutopi labhyate tatra loyam muyam ekalam janma karma sukritarna labhyate. This is the definition of Krishna consciousness that Prabhupada took from Srila Rupa Goswami, and it explains Krishna bhakti rasa bhavitamati, that Krishna consciousness means when one is absorbed in the mellows of loving Krishna. So how to come to that platform of having the mind absorbed in the mellows of loving Krishna. So the principal process, of course, is to hear about Krishna. Hearing about Krishna, it is said that one can evolve to the spiritual platform. So this Krishna consciousness movement is primarily engaging people in hearing about Krishna. And of course, if one is chanting about Krishna, then one will automatically be hearing about Krishna. And this hearing and chanting eventually brings to the platform when one is absorbed in remembering Krishna. So this absorption in remembering Krishna, this is called Krishna consciousness, when one is actually remembering Krishna. In Bhagavad Gita, here it says that one should understand something about Krishna's birth. So why should we understand something about Krishna's birth as opposed to his activities? Does anyone know? Why Janma? Yes. Yes, that's what it says. Divyam, but why should we understand that Krishna's birth is transcendental? What makes it transcendental? Why is Krishna's birth transcendental and not ours? What's that? He's unborn. Yes, yes. Yes, he comes in a spiritual body. His body is the absolute truth. This body we have, sorry to tell you, is not the absolute truth. It is a very relative truth. But Krishna's body is the absolute truth, which means when Krishna comes, everything comes with him. Everything means everything. So when Krishna, one day Balaram complained to Mother Yasoda that you're a child, Krishna is eating dirt. So Mother Yasoda said, is it true, Krishna, that you're eating dirt? And Krishna said, no, how can it be true? Why would I eat dirt? He said, actually, my friends and Balaram, we had a quarrel today. And now Balaram, he's complaining just to get me into trouble. But if you think that I've actually eaten dirt, then I'll open my mouth and you can look inside my mouth and see whether or not I've eaten dirt or not. So Krishna opened his mouth, and Mother Yasoda saw within his mouth all of outer space. So try to imagine that. I don't think you'll be able to. But we can try to imagine. All of space was in Krishna's mouth. Pandavijaya was telling me yesterday that if you walk up this hill, I usually walk up every day, and you go a little further and you go all the way up, there's the highest point in the area around here, and then you can see for miles and miles around. So one night he couldn't sleep, so he went up there, and it was a clear night, and he saw millions and billions of stars in the sky. So just imagine, everything was in Krishna's mouth. Billions and billions of stars and all of outer space. He saw all the demigods and time. He saw a complete cosmic creation. Saw all the material ingredients. And this is all in Krishna's mouth. And then Mother Yasoda also saw Krishna there, and she was seated. He was seated on her lap, and in his mouth was a little bit of dirt also. So then she realized that Krishna had eaten dirt. He'd eaten all the planets too. And she said, that's all right. So Krishna closed his mouth. So Krishna, to understand who Krishna is, that he comes along with everything, that this universe is just one little universe, and everything is within Krishna's mouth. Not only this one little universe, but all the universes and all the creation. So how to understand that, of course, that is the process of Krishna consciousness. To understand, first of all, that when Krishna comes, aham sarvasya prava matak sarvam pravartate iti matva vijante imam buddha bhava samanvitaha. But if one can understand that this cowherd boy in Vrindavan, who even Lord Brahma, the creator of the whole universe, thought as an ordinary little child and wanted to test him by stealing all his calves and cowherd boys. And even Lord Indra thought, who is this boy, this talkative little boy, that he's disturbed my sacrifice, and now I'm going to punish him by sending the Samvatarka clouds to punish the residents of Vrindavan, this little talkative boy. And then when Krishna raised Govardhan Hill with his left pinky and held it for 7 days, even Indra was thunderstruck. So what to speak of ourselves, the problem is that we think we've understood Krishna. And now we're wondering what else is there to understand. But Krishna is not very easy to understand. How anyone can be the source of all beauty? How within one form all beautiful things can be contained? How within one form, or how one person could know everything? How one person could be controlling everything. So this is actually so difficult to understand, but still Krishna gives us a process by which we can understand it, and that process begins to hear about Krishna from Bhagavad Gita, especially from Bhagavad Gita. And in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna gives us examples of how we can appreciate him even within our present conceptions of life. Beginning with rasoham apsnu kantiya. So we can meditate on these things. How that Krishna is a taste in water. Generally we take everything for granted because that is the influence of the material energy upon the conditioned soul. everything becomes more or less taken for granted. Familiarity. We've been in the material world for so long, we've been so familiar with it, that most of the things we're very much unaware of. So much so that people have to do all kinds of horrible things in this age in order to get a little bit of excitement. Badri Narayan Prabhu sent around a little, Badri Narayan Prabhu from San Diego, he likes to tell stories about the material world. So he sent around some stories that they had published in the newspaper, I think, about all the different things that people do to get a little excitement. One person tied together these little cords, I don't know what they're used for, with little hooks on the end you hang things from. So he tied them together onto a railroad track, onto a railroad bridge, and he jumped off with his leg tied to it. Needless to say, he crashed onto the ground and was killed. Because he tied so many of them together, it was more than the distance between the top of the railroad bridge to the bottom. And then also the story of some people during the 4th of July when they have fireworks. They set up a firework, they're going to set firework display on top of a 100,000 gallon tank of petrol, distilled petrol. And as soon as they lit the fireworks off, needless to say, that the whole thing exploded into a fireball that was seen for miles around, and their bodies were found something like 250 meters away. So people do all kinds of crazy things to get a little excitement. Because this material world is generally a very dull place. And therefore, to get a little excitement, people have to do increasingly more and more outrageous things in order to get some kind of something interesting. But one who's in Krishna consciousness, then everything for him actually becomes very interesting. So Krishna says, I'm the taste in water, so that we can meditate, where actually did the taste come from? In water. Why is it that there's taste in water? Because if it was just water, just liquid, then that liquid wouldn't actually quench our thirst. But it has just the right taste, and that taste is what actually quenches our thirst. Isn't that right? So where did that taste come from? Why is it that in water there's the exact taste to quench thirst? First of all, why do we have thirst? And why is it that the taste of water is the exact taste that quenches the thirst, and it is the water that we need in order to keep our body functioning properly? And what is the whole purpose of keeping our body functioning properly? Just to keep the body functioning properly? So these things are something to be meditated upon. Or the Krishna says, I am the light and the sun and the moon. So if one looks at the sun in the sky, then generally we take it for granted that there is some sun in the sky and that's the end of it. People go to the beach and they lie on the beach and they simply try to absorb the rays of the sun. But how many people go to the beach and they think about the person who put the sun there so that they can actually enjoy the sun rays? That the sun rays, which are so pleasing that when they're there, everyone goes out and they feel very good about it. They're smiling, just like the sun, they appreciate what a nice day, they're talking about it. But how many people acknowledge the fact that who is the person who put it there for our existence in the material world and also for our happiness? Or the light of the moon? That the scientists have done studies and they've ascertained that vegetables with moonlight, they're able to taste very delicious. But in the absence of the moonlight, vegetables have no taste. So the question is, who has made all these wonderful arrangements? If we believe that it's Krishna, then at every step in our lives, we'll only see Krishna and appreciate him. And if we think it is all by accident, or we don't really think it's worthy to be thought about, I have so many other things that I have to do and think about other than that, then the result is we'll go through life not seeing things as they actually are, taking everything for granted. So Bhagavad Gita is an attempt to convince us how to appreciate that not only Krishna is God, but even the very things that we're seeing around us and appreciating, they're all gifts coming from Him. There are very lives that are arranged at every moment by the grace of Krishna through His material energy, giving us exactly what we wanted and what we deserve, and we can make it all worthwhile if we understand that the person who's arranging our lives for us, the person who's made it possible for even us to live in the material world and go through the illusions or the enlightenments that we're striving for, then that is all by the grace of Krishna. So Krishna comes once in a day of Brahma, and that's every 8 million. Lord Brahma lives for, there is Sahasra Yuga Pariyantam Ahoryad Brahmano Vidu. 4,300,000 times 1,000, or 4,300,000,000 years, is equal to one day of Brahma, and his night is equal to the same amount. So every 8,632,000,000 years, Krishna comes. So it is not a very common occurrence, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself personally coming. So Krishna comes because, although He comes in many other incarnations, and each incarnation has a specific duty, a specific purpose, in order to further the consciousness of the souls in this material world, so gradually they can appreciate, ultimately, Krishna's form as Krishna. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada mentions that this verse, Janma Karma Che Me Divyam, is the most important verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, He may have mentioned other times that other verses are also the most important verse. But this, He once mentioned, is the most important verse. And the very essential verse of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Parihasa Sloka, in the Srimad Bhagavatam is what? Does anyone know? Ete changsa kala punsam krishnastu bhagavan swayam indriyari vyakalam lokam mridiyanti yuge yuge. That Krishna is not an ordinary incarnation. He is the avatari. He is the source of all the incarnations, including Lord Narayan, Lord Nisringha, Lord Ramachandra, Vraha. All the incarnations all come from Krishna. And He comes periodically in His different incarnations in order to protect the demigods when they're disturbed by the demons. So this advent of Krishna is not something ordinary. This is just like understanding something about the president's personal life. In this material world, newspapers usually report the president or the prime minister, he gave such and such speech, etc. He passed such and such bill. But there's always those newspapers that are always trying to find out what an important person's private life is like. They always have these people behind trees with long distance telescopic cameras, you know, trying to find out what his intimate life is like. You know, here's a shot of the president in the bathtub. And these are the ones that people are most interested in, trying to find out, what is he actually doing? Is he an ordinary person like us? Does he actually eat and sleep? What does he do? He plays checkers for a hobby, or what is he doing for his spare time? Even I saw when I was on the airplane that President Clinton, this year he wrote down what books he's going to read during his holiday. I mean, for us, it wouldn't make any difference what books he wants to read for his holiday. But people are interested in this. What books is the President of the United States reading? So this is information that's considered to be very confidential. So similarly, Krishna comes in so many incarnations, displays so many different pastimes. He's displaying the pastime of with the demigods and the demons, going to the ocean of milk, and Krishna is suggesting that they take Mount Meru with him. Mount Meru, which is made out of gold, and which is 100,000 yojanas high, which is quite high, made out of solid gold. All the demigods and the demons in the universe, they're carrying the mountain, and suddenly into the ocean of milk, and suddenly the mountain collapses on them, and they're all crushed. So that was the end of the story, it would be. But that wasn't the end of the story. Krishna happens to be there, fortunately, and he lifts up the mountain and revives all the demigods and the demons, and then they carry the mountain to the center of the ocean of milk, and they begin churning, and Vasuki becomes the rod of churning, not the rod, I guess the rope for churning the mountain. And the demigods and the demons, the demigods immediately choose the front, along with Lord Achyuta, of the serpent. The demigod, the demons have the back, the tail, and immediately the demons, they protest. What? Why are the demigods up in front? Why do they take the front? Why do we get the inauspicious tail? So immediately they protest, and the demigods say, all right, what can we do? You can take the front. So then the demons, they all, headed by Bali Maharaj, they all take the front of the serpent's tail, and they churn in the ocean of milk in order to get nectar. So they're churning and churning, and the demon is breathing out fire, or the Vasuki is breathing out fire from his mouth, and all the demons are being scorched by the fire and suffocating. And luckily the demigods in the back, although they're choking a little bit, they're not getting scorched by the fire. And they're churning and churning. And finally the mountain sinks into the ocean. And all the demigods and the demons are quite disappointed. So Krishna appears as Kurma and puts the mountain on his back because he has an itch. So when the demigods and the demons are churning the ocean, or the mountain Meru, it's scratching the itch on his back. So could you imagine you need a mountain made out of gold, 800,000 yojanas high, or 100,000 yojanas high, that's 800,000 miles high, just to scratch your back. And then Krishna sits on the top of the mountain. So Krishna's there as Achyuta with the demigods, churning Vasuki. He's as Kurma with the mountains on the top, and he's sitting on top of the mountain in a 8-arm form, or I think it was a 12-arm form. So these pastimes, they're certainly interesting, but what does it have to do with us? Of course, they show us many things, such as the fact that in this mature world there's always demons and demigods. And the demons and demigods, they're always going to be at odds with each other. As soon as the demigods say one thing, the demons will say something else. So many things can be learned from these pastimes, but ultimately, what does it have to do with any kind of goal or destination? Unless we're striving to become a demon or a demigod or a Vasuki. Therefore, at the end of all these incarnations, Krishna himself personally comes to show us the purport of all the incarnations he has. Ultimately, Krishna says, Janma paritranaya sarunam vinashaya chidiskritam dharma samstapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. That Krishna comes for three reasons. One is to protect the devotees. The other is to vanquish the demons. And the third is to reestablish religious principles. But that's not the only reason why Krishna comes. He also comes in order to create devotees, to destroy the demoniac spirit, and to show what is the real purpose of religion. Therefore, 5,000 years ago, Krishna showed us what is the actual goal of all religious processes. There may be many religions, and there are many religions on this planet, and all of them think that they have the only way. They have the truth, the light, and the way, and no one understands God except through them. And we also say the same thing, that the purpose of all religion is to understand God, and there is no religion that can explain God to us more perfectly than this Bhagavad Dharma. And of course, today we're celebrating Krishna's appearance, And in order to appreciate Krishna's appearance, we have to understand so many different aspects of Krishna. But just today we focus more on just upon Krishna, how he appeared, and perhaps something about his different pastimes and activities, but especially upon his appearance. But we should not take it for granted or think it's something mythological, that Krishna is just another mythological personality found in a book called the Krishna Book, and that the Krishna Book is written for little children so that they can fall asleep at night dreaming about Krishna and his pastimes. And that it is not, you know, it's some book that we read when we want to get our minds put it on something like a fairy tale. But we should understand that this book is actually the ultimate reality, and that one who's in that reality, he sees our material, present material life as just another dream. Often when we hear the Krishna book or stories about Krishna, we're ready to go off and dream. We think that, let me go off and sleep. Because, matter of fact, that's what we used to do. Right before we took rest, we used to drink milk and bananas, banana milk, and read the Krishna book so that we could dream. But actually, we should meditate upon these pastimes. We should use our imagination and actually visualize these pastimes. And if we can do that in a devotional way, then the result is one will actually understand what is the difference between mundane consciousness and spiritual consciousness. That Krishna's form, his quality, his pastimes, and his name, they're all identical with Krishna. And if one is able to meditate upon these pastimes, one will be able to actually experience what is transcendental spiritual life. What does it mean? The Krishna book is specifically meant for meditation. That meditation, of course, by going through the first 9 cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it should give us the understanding of who we're meditating upon and also the devotional feeling towards Krishna so that we'll meditate upon him with a feeling of appreciation at least, if not love. The original, in the Goswami's commentaries to the different pastimes, there is additional information that we don't find in the Krishna book or in the Srimad Bhagavatam about Krishna's advent. So Krishna comes once every day in Brahma. So the original advent of Krishna is explained by the Goswami's commentaries that one time the demigods, one time Bhumi in the form of a cow approached Lord Brahma and complained to him that the Danavas and the Daityas were overpopulating the earth, and therefore they were disturbing the whole atmosphere there so that the devotees couldn't actually perform their devotional service. And therefore, with tears in her eyes, she approached him to solve the calamitous position that the earth had fallen into. So Lord Brahma and all the demigods at this time, they went to the palace of Lord Vishnu, and there they told Lord Vishnu about the calamitous position of the earth. And Lord Vishnu agreed that the only person who could actually solve these problems is Lord Krishna. And therefore he invited the demigods to come with him to visit Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. At this time, Lord Vishnu, he revealed an effulgent water pathway that the demigods boarded a boat, and Lord Vishnu boarded a boat, and they took this boat, and it went to the beginning of the layers of the universe. And there they saw a hole that had been made by Trivikram, by Lord Vamanadeva, and sailing through this hole, they passed through they saw all the universes that just like looked like bubbles in an ocean. And sailing past all the universes, they came to the effulgent white Viraj River, and they passed beyond that into the effulgence of the Brahma Jyoti, and there they saw unlimited Vaikuntha planets full of infinite effulgence. And they came to one spot which was more effulgent than millions of suns, And they enter into the effulgence and they soar. Within that effulgence was Anantadev holding this Goloka Vrindavan on his soft transcendental body, which was decorated with all kinds of transcendental ecstasies. And entering into the realm of Goloka Vrindavan, they came to the gates of Goloka Vrindavan, which was guarded by beautiful associates of Krishna. And although they were smiling very beautifully, they had sticks in their hands, and they told the demigods and Lord Vishnu, "Who are you?" Or they asked them, "Who are you?" And they said, "We're the demigods and Lord Vishnu." They said, "Yes, that's all right, but which demigods are you? From which universe?" And so the demigods, they said, "We thought we're the only demigods." They said, "Well, you're very inexperienced because you don't really know very much about what's going on." So they all became very bewildered. They said, "Actually, there are so many demigods in so many universes that before you can enter, we have to tell Lord Krishna which demigods you are." Lord Vishnu said, "Well, we're the demigods that we're in the universe. They're the demigods. They come from the universe that Lord Vamanadeva, in his form of Trivikram, poked a hole in the universe." So these associates of Lord Krishna, who had beautiful gopis with exquisite eyes, they all went into, they said, "Very good." And remembering the pastimes of Lord Krishna in his form of Vamanadeva poking a hole through the universe, they went into Goloka Vrindavan to inform Lord Krishna of the appearance of the demigods. And they came back and said, "Yes, you can come in. You're from the universe. You're from the most insignificant universe with the smallest Lord Brahma. You can go in there." So the demigods very happily entered into Goloka Vrindavan, and they saw it was full of forests with trees of blooming flowers and full of trees which were blossoming and beautiful birds and buzzing bees. And they were all surrounded a very huge mountain called Govardhan. And on Govardhan Hill, there were wonderful places of caves for the pastimes of the cowherd boys and Krishna and the gopis. There were wonderful colored waterfalls and many beautiful palaces. And on the Govardhan, there were very succulent grasses to feed the cows. And the demigods and Lord Vishnu wandered through Govardhan. And there they saw there were many cowherd boys and cowherd girls who were all very beautiful with beautiful colored saris on and very wonderful cowherd boys and cowherd men with turbans and sticks in their hands who were very pious. And wandering through there, they came to a very wonderful desire tree. And underneath the desire tree was Lord Krishna, and he had a peacock feather in his hair. He had golden ornaments. He had the very Kastuba jewel. And his throne, there was him and Srimati Radharani. He appeared to be less like a tamal tree, and Radharani appeared to be like a golden vine around the tamal tree. And there they were on a throne studded with Kastuba jewels, and surrounded by cowherd boys and cowherd girls. And the demigods, they offered obeisances and in ecstasy, they began offering prayers to Lord Krishna. And in choked up voices, they were praising Krishna and this wonderful scene that they saw. And then Krishna asked them, "Yes, my dear demigods and Lord Vishnu." At this time, Krishna was sitting there, and Lord Vishnu with eight arms appeared, and then merged into the body of Lord Krishna. Lord Nrisimhadeva appeared in his all-opulent form and merged into the body of Krishna. Vamanadeva appeared, and Sri Vishnu appeared. Lord Narayan appeared, and they all merged into the body of Vishnu, of Krishna. And at this time, Srimati Radharani is sitting there holding Krishna's flute nonchalantly. And all the demigods were completely amazed. They realized that Krishna is the source of all the incarnations. And in ecstasy, they were offering their prayers. And then Lord Krishna said, "Yes, what do you want?" So this time the demigods, they explained to him about the calamitous position that their earth planet had fallen into, and they asked for his help, his appearance, that he would be the only one who would be able to save them. So Krishna said yes, that the words of the Vedas are my words, the Brahmins are my mouth, the cows are my transcendental body, and you, the demigods, are my limbs. So certainly I'll come there and advent myself in order to protect the earth and reestablish religious principles. So this time Srimati Radharani became overwhelmed with grief, feeling the imminent separation of Lord Krishna. Tears began to flow from her eyes. Her hair stood erect in ecstasy, in transcendental lamentation, and she fell down, feeling the imminent separation from Krishna. And she said, "My dear Krishna, that if you leave me, then I will not be able to maintain my life. I will immediately die." So Krishna said, "No, you, my dear Srimati Radharani, when I go to the earth planet for my activities there, you can come with me." She said, "But no, I can't go, because if I go, then if I leave here with Govardhan Hill and the Jamuna and all the associates like the cowherd boys and the gopis, then I cannot be happy without their transcendental association." So Krishna said, "No problem, that I'll bring a portion of Goloka Vrindavan with me when we go and make our appearance on this earth planet." So he took 47 kroshas, which is approximately 95 miles, square miles of Vrindavan Dham, with him, along with Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jasoda, Devaki and Vasudev, Sudama, Shidam, Vishaka, Lalita, the cows, the bees, 95 miles or 47 kroshas of Vrindavan Dham came down with him. So this is how Vrindavan has come to this earth planet. And 5,000 years ago, then again, Lord Bhumi, or Bhumi Devi, she approached Brahma again, because this happens periodically, and she again had tears in her eyes. This is where the tear weapon comes from. Ladies, they know if they want to get their way, the last resort, Prabhupada writes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, is the tear weapon. That's like, so Bhumi, the earth planet, with her tear weapon, she approached Lord Brahma, and she told him again about the calamitous position of the earth planet. And Lord Brahma, this time they didn't go to Goloka Vrindavan, but they approached the shore of the ocean of milk, along with all the demigods, headed by Lord Shiva, and began to offer prayers to Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu, he has an island on the ocean of milk called Swetadweep, and there he rests. He has a big palace there with associates also. And there he heard Brahma's prayers explaining about the problems that they were having. So Lord Vishnu, specifically Karna Dakshai Vishnu, told him that, "Don't worry, that soon I'll make my appearance on this earth planet, and you, along with all the demigods, should also advent yourselves and help me in my transcendental pastimes. And that first I'm going to send my Yogamaya potency, and Yogamaya will make all the arrangements for my advent." So Lord Krishna first appeared. First he sent his mother and father, Mother Jasoda, Nanda Maharaj. He sent his transcendental associates. And Yogamaya made necessary all the different arrangements for Krishna's appearance. First, the six sons of Hiranyakashipu had been killed. They first appeared there, and Kamsa killed them one after another. They all represented the different six material states of consciousness, namely Krodha, Lobha, Kama, Matsara, Moha, and Mada. Namely, lust, anger, greed, envy,
illusion, and madness. So these six suns representing the incarnations of these six states of consciousness first appeared in the womb of Mother Devaki, and Kamsa killed them one after another, which was kind of him. And then Krishna, after these six states of consciousness were killed, who came next into the womb of Devaki? Yes, Balaram. So he came in the form of Ananta, Shesha, just like in order to get the mercy of Krishna, in order for Krishna to appear within our heart, who has to appear there first? Yes, the spiritual master has to appear there. And through the spiritual master, Krishna enters into our heart through following the instructions. So the original spiritual master, Lord Nityananda. And then Krishna, after these six states of consciousness were killed, who came next into the womb of Devaki? Yes, Balaram. So he came in the form of Ananta, Shesha, just like in order to get the mercy of Krishna, in order for Krishna to appear within our heart, who has to appear there first? Yes, the spiritual master has to appear there. And through the spiritual master, Krishna enters into our heart through following the instructions. So the original spiritual master, Lord Nityananda, Ananta, who is preaching Krishna consciousness with his unlimited mouth, he entered into the womb of Devaki and made it suitable for Krishna's appearance. So then, at this time, Balaram was transferred to the womb of Rohini, and Krishna was ready to make his appearance in the form of Krishna. So at this time, what time are we? What's the next thing on the schedule? No, there's something. What's supposed to be next? They're supposed to take the deities around? Oh, okay. Well, we won't go too much longer. So this time, according to the Kamanika dictionary, it explains that all the arrangements were made within the universe for the appearance of Krishna. Not only the womb of Devaki was prepared, but also throughout the whole universe. And confidentially, also Krishna, he actually didn't make his appearance in the womb of Devaki. He made his appearance in the womb of Mother Jasoda. He was appearing simultaneously both in the womb of Devaki and Mother Jasoda. Mother Jasoda actually gave birth to twins. One of them was Krishna, and the other was Yogamaya. Because Krishna, he never goes a step out of Vrindavan. So actually, he was always in Vrindavan, but he disappeared in Vrindavan. But he's always there eternally. But in order to understand Krishna more thoroughly, then Krishna's appearance as Vasudeva Krishna and Mathura was also going to take place simultaneously. So, at this time, all the stars in the sky were all arranged into a perfect constellations. And the star Rohini, what was the name of the star that was especially became prominent? Rohini became prominent. And Rohini is a special constellation of Lord Brahma. And when everything was very auspicious astrologically, then the sun, or the moon, which wasn't in full moon, but it was past the full moon, appeared as a full moon by a special arrangement of Yogamaya. It was a full moon on the appearance day of Lord Krishna. And everywhere was auspicious signs. The air began to blow very pleasantly with very nice aromas from the flowers that were blooming. The minds of the people became very peaceful. The Brahmins, which were forbidden to perform sacrifices, they began to light fires in sacrifice. The peacocks were dancing and cooing very pleasantly. In all the universe, everyone felt very peaceful. By the shore of the ocean,
The clouds were thundering very mildly, and at this time, Krishna made his advent in the womb of Devaki. So everything was auspicious, because when the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears, that is the most auspicious time. Well, it was a star called Abhijit. Abhijit became prominent. And in the cell of the prison of Kamsa, Krishna made his appearance. And Devaki in his forearm form, with Kaustubha gem and helmeted head and forearms holding conch shell, wheel, and lotus flower. So Devaki and Vasudev realized that this was not an ordinary child. And immediately they began to offer prayers. Ananda Kunduvi, he began to offer, he gave away 100,000 cows in charity and so much hills of grains to the Brahmins on the appearance day of his son, his transcendental son. They offered prayers, and of course, they realized that Krishna was coming specifically to protect them from the hands of cruel Kamsa. So Krishna revealed, or Mother Devaki wanted Krishna to hide himself from the cruel Kamsa, to assume his form as a baby, as a child, because she thought that if Kamsa saw Krishna with four arms, he'd become very disturbed and kill him immediately. This is called Yogamaya. Mother Devaki didn't consider that if Kamsa saw Krishna with four arms, with a conch shell, wheel, and lotus flower in his hands and club, the Kamsa probably would have looked the other way and ran. But she was thinking in her maternal way that Kamsa might kill her son, and therefore she requested him to become an ordinary baby. So Krishna became an ordinary baby, and at this time the shackles on the hands of Vasudev, they opened, and Krishna took his child in his arms, who is now appearing as an ordinary baby. And at this time, all the guards in the prison house of Kamsa fell asleep. And it was raining outside, pouring torrents of rain. And so Ananda Devi appeared and covered the head of Krishna, just like an umbrella, and covered Vasudev. And at this time, the river Jamuna was roaring. It wasn't a small little river like it is now. If we go to Vrindavan now, it appears to be a small little river, because that's because of a number of things. One is it because they created a dam that diverts most of the water of the Jamuna, so therefore it doesn't flow past Vrindavan anymore. But there are parts of the Jamuna you can go to, you can see it's actually quite a big river in some parts. So the part separating Vrindavan from Mathura was a huge river at that time, and because of the enormous amounts of rain, it was flooding. But the river Jamuna parted. That's probably where the story of the parting of the Dead Sea comes from in the pastime of Moses. That's the original story. It parted, and so Krishna, Vasudeva and Krishna, they walked by. They were able to pass through the Jamuna. Of course, Jamuna stole Krishna for a while from the hands of Vasudeva, began to play with Krishna. And therefore, the Jamuna is considered to be 1,000 times more purifying than the Jamuna, because the Jamuna still has the dust of Krishna's lotus feet. And then Vasudeva finally found Krishna and took him to Vrindavan. But actually, when Vasudeva lost Krishna in the Jamuna, it was actually Krishna he picked up, and therefore that same Krishna merged into his body, or became one with his body again. And then Vasudeva, I guess actually was on the way back. When Vasudeva was passing through Jamuna on the way back, then that Krishna he had picked up, or the Yogamaya he had picked up, Krishna had merged into the body, and then Vasudeva took Yogamaya back to the prison house of Kamsa and shackled himself again. And then, of course, we know that Kamsa came in order to kill Krishna. So this transcendental pastime is explained in the Krishna book.
So we can meditate upon it. Matter of fact, we can meditate upon all these pastimes of Krishna within the Krishna book. Prabhupada says specifically the Krishna book is meant for relishing. In the spiritual world, people are not trying to figure out whether Krishna is God or not. They're simply loving Krishna. So Krishna's pastimes, they're simply in the mood of love, transcendental love. Of course, within the pastimes, there are killing of demons in order to kill our demoniac tendencies, which cover ourselves from understanding Krishna. But the major portion of Krishna's pastimes, especially in Vrindavan, are full of transcendental pleasure, transcendental love, and by meditating upon these in the mood of service, in the mood of trying to love Krishna and serve Him, we can actually enter into them. We can actually experience them. So this experiencing is called tattvadaha, to understand in truth. To understand superficially these pastimes doesn't actually give us the desired goal. So we have to learn the science of how to actually understand these pastimes, how to actually accept them in such a way as we can actually experience them. So it is by the transcendental experience of these pastimes that we become eligible to enter into the spiritual world. And that is the actual goal of the Krishna consciousness movement, is to give up this materialistic life, this life where we're the center, and to enter into the life where Krishna is the center. So we may not be able to appreciate that very much. In this material world, we're very much used to being the center. In every incarnation we've had, since time immemorial, everyone has always believed that they're actually the center. We have 4 billion Muda incarnations in this material world. And everyone here, the Muda avatars. Everyone here is trying to become the Muda avatar, the center of the universe, thinking everything here rests around my present pastimes. But if one can understand that actually reality rests around Krishna's pastimes, and that these pastimes are open to everyone if we open our heart to Krishna. So in order to open our heart to Krishna, we have to open our heart to the process of devotional service, which is revealed through the disciple succession. So if we try to understand the process of devotional service properly and apply it within our lives, then gradually our hearts will open and gradually Krishna will be able to appear there and we'll be able to appreciate and relish Krishna's eternal pastimes and understand that our little pastime that's going on now is not very important. That what is important is Krishna's pastimes, and that pastimes are equally important for everyone. Therefore, we can read these pastimes again and again and again, and the more we read them, the more we can appreciate them, the more we can enter into them through the process of rendering Krishna devotional service with our lives, the more we can give up our concern over our present insignificant material existence and realize that the only value of this existence, that it can be utilized in order to glorify Krishna's transcendental pastimes rather than trying to put ourselves as the origin of some kind of important pastime in this material world. So, I'll stop there. Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Comments? Yes. What do you mean by we should be the center of our lives?
Not really, but I mean, we have a responsibility. If you want to make a proper advancement, we have to be very conscious of ourselves, isn't it?
Yes, but our real selves. And what is our real self? And what is the spirit self? What is his real identity? Yeah, so that we should be very conscious of what Krishna wants us to do. But then we will realize that it's not my pastime. As soon as when we actually surrender to Krishna's desire, then we realize it's not my pastime, it's Krishna's pastime. Even this body, which we think is ours, is actually not ours. It's actually Krishna's body. Even this present existence that we think is our existence is not really our existence, it's Krishna's existence. So now we're experiencing a very relative and small part of Krishna's existence, and we're thinking it's our existence. But when we utilize this existence and we dovetail it back into Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's desire, when we surrender it, then we realize it's not my pastime at all. then we'll realize that it's actually part of, when it's utilized in Krishna's service, then we'll realize that it actually belongs to Krishna. And we'll be able to appreciate our very existence as being service to Krishna. And then the soul, he'll be able to love Krishna. He'll love this body, even this body, he'll love it. He'll love everyone's body, and he'll love Krishna, both in all his different aspects and all his different forms. Everywhere he'll see Krishna. So the reality is that we're actually 1/10,000th the size of Tipihara in size, and our purpose is we should take care of our soul. That's the whole purpose of human life, is that it's one, the one opportunity that we can make a choice to take care of our soul. So we should know who we actually are, and if we work according to who we actually are, everything else will be taken care of. Is that clear?
Practically speaking, I can only experience who I am, so it's going to be free at this point anyway.
Yes, that's all we can do. But that's enough. That's all we have to do. That's up to Krishna. But if we theoretically understand that I'm Krishna's servant, and then practically apply that theory as much as we can within our life, then Krishna will gradually give us the understanding by which we'll understand who we actually are. We'll realize in truth who we actually are and who Krishna actually is. So we can only do it a little at a time, but that little at a time, that's the whole purpose of what human form of life is meant for. Gradually we can understand what is illusion and what is reality, and gradually we can choose, as we understand that more deeply, that the more we choose reality over illusion, then the more we'll be able to understand things properly and realize things as they are. And the perfection of that is to become Krishna conscious. So Krishna consciousness is a gradual process, beginning with a little faith, then associating with it because we have some faith, therefore we associate with the devotees and hear about Krishna. And because we hear about Krishna, we become interested in rendering service to Krishna. And as we become more interested in rendering service to Krishna, then we become interested in giving up those things which prevent us from rendering better service to Krishna. And the more we give those up, then we become fixed in Krishna's service, and then the real taste for Krishna consciousness begins, and then the mind becomes fixed on Krishna, and our real feelings towards Krishna develop, and finally the beginnings of real love for Krishna will be there. So it's a gradual process. So we're engaged in the process, but we know because we're engaged in the process, one day the perfection will be there. Yes?
About this Lila of Govindam, Jyotirin Govindam, from the Rajanova Parikrama last year, that was a nice additional detail about the story which I never heard before. But it was said that, first of all, Krishna, he lifted Govindam, you know, with his left hand. And he lifted it on his hand like a normal person would lift. And then and he was standing there for some time, and suddenly he saw Mother Yasoda standing, like shocked that he will throw it. Probably he will not be able to hold the hill with his hand. So he was looking, and he understood in her mind. And then he, in a very cunning way, he suddenly lifted his little pinky, and he looked at her, smiling, like, so you see, with my pinky. I've never heard it before, but it's a nice thing.
The other day we were talking about Krishna's transcendental. He has 55 transcendental qualities that the living entities also have in minute detail. And one of the qualities is shy. Someone mentioned shy. So that's explained in the Nectar of Devotion that when Krishna was holding Govardhan Hill with his left pinky, so at that time the gopis were there and he looked over at their breasts. So when he looked over at their breasts, the hill started to shake a little bit. So, at this time, Balaram began to smile because all the residents of Vrindavan, they all became very nervous that the hill is shaking. They thought maybe Krishna is going to drop the hill. So Balaram was smiling, realizing that Krishna has unlimited power, that how could he possibly drop it? But when Krishna saw Balaram, he was smiling like that. He thought that Balaram is reading my mind. So he became very embarrassed. And that's an instance of Krishna becoming shy. So there are many wonderful pastimes of Krishna. I guess you can go deeper and deeper. At the end, after all the cowherd men and the cows, they left, then only some of the coward men and the coward boys were left because they thought that they were actually holding up Govardhan Hill with their sticks. So they said, Krishna, you can go now. We'll put down the Govardhan Hill. So Krishna started to smile and he said, no, I said, you go down. I'll put down Govardhan Hill. They said, no, you're just a little boy. How can you possibly hold up Govardhan Hill? He said, no. He said, all right. So then Krishna transferred some of the weight to the coward men and to the coward boys. And they immediately fell down unconscious because of the tremendous weight. And then they all left, and then Krishna put down the Govardhan Hill. Yes?
How is it that the Yamuna is a thousand times more purified?
Well, it said actually at that time the Yamuna was a thousand times more purifying, so the Ganga felt a little bit inferior. But it said when Lord Chaitanya came and bathed again in the Ganga, then the Ganga got back its original position again. So there's no difference between Navadvip and Vrindavan. But sometimes due to some transcendental competition, there may be consideration. So luckily we came after Lord Chaitanya's advent. So when we bathe in Ganges, we can get the same result. Even more result, because within the heart of Lord Chaitanya was Lord Krishna. The whole spiritual world was there. Yes?
In such a very Buddhist paramount, I was thinking then what religious principles he has to be established.
In Satya Yuga? They're Paramahansas because they follow religious principles. So Krishna shows what the religious principles are. So he came as Kapila Deva, as the incarnation, and he showed the process of meditation. So they're qualified, but they also have to, just like someone may be qualified, but they also have to come to a higher platform than just being a Paramahansa. In the sense that they have to become Krishna conscious also. And that process is done by meditating directly on the pastimes of Krishna. Just like Krishna says, or Kuru says also, that even if you're liberated, still beyond that you have to engage in devotional service. So the process of devotional service is shown by Krishna in the form of Kapila Deva in Satya Yuga, the process of meditation on Krishna directly. Yes? Hunks Avatar, I believe he gave the Vedas back to Lord Brahma. I don't know if he killed the demons, Kaitava and who was the one who that was Madhusudana, I guess. But anyhow, he gave the Vedas back to Brahma. They were stolen from him, and he gave them back to him. Anything else? Yes.
You were mentioning that most of the time we consider the sun like something very ordinary, and also the pastimes of Krishna. So many times we hear, and it seems like ordinary, but sometimes we hear, and it seems like very extraordinary. But just like last time I was trying to lose the first Brahma Samhita, it was just in the train in the back of your eyes. And then somehow or other, it did something more than it was used to doing. So why is that? That I was just sitting in the train, doing nothing special.
Yeah, so Krishna is in our heart. He says, Tesham eva nukamparatam aham agyanajam tamaha nasham yam yatmabhavashto gyanidipena bhashvata. Or Tesham sadatam yuktanam bhajantam pritipurvakam dadami buddhi yogam tam yena mamupiyantite. To those who are constantly devoted and who worship me with love, then I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. So when Krishna sees that we're making a special effort, then he notes it down, and either directly or sometime later, he'll reveal himself a little bit more to us. So that's due to our, somehow or another, pleasing Krishna at some time. Yes.
One time, one of the lawyers was saying that we were hearing about the questions that I found in the nature of Krishna. She said that she found the description of the kingdom of God, she found that it was boring. And I got upset with it because I said, you can't afford to think that any part of it was boring. She said she lived in the Holy Ground for quite some time, and she said that she found anything else besides Krishna's pastimes boring. But I said that was complete disadvantage.
She thought the pastimes in Vaikuntha were boring?
Yeah.
Sure. I know, in Vaikuntha, when Gopa Kumara went there, then Gopa Kumara, he was a cowherd boy, and somehow or another, he had met his spiritual master who gave him a Gopal mantra. And he kept on chanting this Gopal mantra, and progressively he went from one part of the universe to the next. So finally, he went to Vaikuntha, and while he was in Vaikuntha, because he was attracted to Gopal and Goloka Vrindavan, but somehow or another he didn't know who Gopal was exactly. So therefore he had to go through Vaikuntha. And he went through different parts of Vaikuntha, and finally he came to the palace of Lord Narayan. And Lord Narayan was sitting there on a very effulgent throne with Lakshmi Devi massaging his feet, surrounded by his associates. But he only knew Krishna or Vishnu as Gopal. So as soon as he saw him, he started to run up to him to embrace him, and he yelled out, "Hey Gopal, hey Gopal." So the guards in Vaikuntha immediately grabbed him, because that wasn't the way you're supposed to greet Gopal in Vaikuntha, Vishnu. He's supposed to be in awe and reverence. So they grabbed him and took him outside and told him, and they told him, "Calm down, you know, you're in Vaikuntha, you know, you're supposed to treat him respectfully. This is Vishnu." And they say, "Well, he's a worshiper." Some of them say, "Well, he's a worshiper of Gopal." And they said, "Oh yeah, those pastimes of Gopal, you know, those infantile pastimes and insignificant pastimes on this planet Earth." So some of them, they were arguing that these pastimes are not very important. But some of the wiser ones, they said that, "No, actually, these are actually quite significant pastimes that Lord Vishnu has as Gopal also. We should also take them seriously and respect them." So in Vaikuntha, they also know about these pastimes, but they also don't take them very seriously. And in Vrindavan, they know about Lord Narayan's pastimes, and they don't take them seriously. I mean, they take them seriously, but not as seriously. So this is just natural. Everyone thinks their pastimes are the best. Otherwise, you'd have a whole exodus coming to, you know, everyone would be leaving Vaikuntha, going to Goloka Vrindavan. But they believe like that. But these, our pastimes are the best. But it's not that. Sometimes we hear the kingdom of Vaikuntha, it sounds quite boring. Lord Vishnu is just sitting there and doing nothing, being massaged, but you know, and then everyone just playing a harp and horn. It sounds almost like the Christian edition. But actually, they're full of variegatedness also. Sometimes Lord Vishnu goes into the forest with some cowherd boys there also, and he plays his flute, and they have pastimes there, and they have airplanes, and they have festivals, and everything's going on there. There's all varieties of Krishna's incarnations there. Everything's going on. But it's just, there's a tinge of awe and reverence there too. They have feasts and festivals, and everyone there has a transcendental body, and everything is newer at every moment. So from the mundane plane, we think one thing is better than the other. But on the transcendental platform, every moment is new. It's like the gopis, when they're not with Krishna, they're always looking forward to the time that they'll finally see Krishna, because they have the feeling that they've never seen Krishna so far. And therefore, they're always striving to get Krishna prema. They're always trying to figure out what is the process by which we can actually get love for Krishna. Although they have the highest love for Krishna, although they're seeing Krishna eternally, but still they're thinking they have no love for Krishna. They're always wondering when they're going to see Krishna for the first time. So that's the nature of the spiritual world. It's always fresh. Nitya, nava, nava, yamana. And the nature of the material world is everything is boring. You have to jump off a bridge in order to get some excitement in the material world. Or have a fireworks on top of a 100,000 gallon, you know, gasoline. Yes.
Maybe a stupid question.
Well, we don't need stupid questions. But do you have a better question than that one? I don't know. At your own risk.
What's the significance of fasting from the first holy? What is the real meaning of the fasting and the real?
The real meaning is that, because generally if we fast, it's hope that we'll be able to concentrate more on Krishna's pastimes. We'll be able to hear about them. We'll have some extra time to do some service for Krishna, etc. Generally when you're fasting, it's considered that your consciousness is probably clearer. That's the main thing, is to just have clearer consciousness, so you can appreciate more of the whatever you hear. If you're fasting, you're meditating more on your stomach, then that's not very good. Of course, by some practice, we'd probably learn how to get over that. But sometimes it's not recommended. Just like if a devotee gets very sick on a fast day, if he actually gets very sick, then probably better off taking a little fruit or something like that. Because the whole idea is just to focus on Krishna. That's the whole idea why we do everything. Somehow or another, to improve our meditation about Krishna's name, form, quality, and pastimes. Otherwise, is not considered very important, whatever we do, if we're not helping to do that. And the most important thing that we can do is to do something for Krishna, to please Him. So, basically, we're fasting to please Krishna so we can think of Krishna better, going through some austerity. So we're trying to dedicate that austerity to please Krishna so we can think of Him better. Yes.
You said the pastimes of Krishna are for relishing and wishing bad visual, but at the other end we often heard that we cannot artificially meditate on the pastimes of Krishna.
Why not? What do you mean by artificial? What does it mean? Well, what is?
When we're chanting and we try.
Well, we're not talking about chanting. We're talking about meditate. We have this book called the Krishna Book. So what do you mean by artificially meditating on the pastimes? By reading the Krishna book? It said artificially, when we're chanting, we shouldn't distract our chanting. We shouldn't think that this chanting is a distraction from my real business, which is meditating on Krishna. But if we chant properly, then the meditation on Krishna will automatically come. The chanting is the easiest way of meditating on Krishna. If it's done properly, it will help us meditate upon Krishna's name, form, quality, and pastimes, the easiest possible way of doing it. But if we go past the chanting and we try and go directly into the pastimes, then that's considered artificial. Shri Krishna Janmasmi Ki Jai. Grantara Shiman Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Lalita Vishaka Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande Haribol.